Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 154 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, her heart, maybe her broken heart. Before we start the episode, just know it's made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix, customized just for women. You won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, go to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And here's a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode to rate and review us, because I'm sitting around waiting to hear from you. You know what I'm saying. I love your feedback. All right, it's time for Her.
Her. The podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind.
Her body.
Her life. It's all about her.
Huh. Can you really die of a broken heart? Turns out, broken heart syndrome is not just a term Hollywood made up. It's a real heart condition that's often brought on by stressful situations like a heart-wrenching breakup or the death of a loved one. Yeah, it's the real thing, and we have the real thing. An expert, Dr. Suzanne Steinbaum, who is here to help us understand what this is all about. Dr. Steinbaum is an attending cardiologist who's devoted her career to the treatment of heart disease through early detection, education, and prevention. She has been the director of Women's Heart Health of Norwell Lenox Hill for over 11 years and is beginning as the director of Women's Cardiovascular Health Prevention and Wellness at the Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City. Yay! She's the author of Dr. Suzanne Steinbaum's Heart Book, Every Woman's Guide to a Heart-Healthy Life. Ah, Suzanne, welcome to Her again. We're so happy to tap right into your expertise as a cardiologist to help us understand this whole thing about a broken heart and the broken heart syndrome. So welcome back.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Now, listen, you were quoted in this article. Well, you were quoted in this article, and we really want to understand, what is this thing? What is this broken heart thing?
I think as women, we get what this means. I think we are heart-centered beings, and we think about the concept of being brokenhearted. We feel in our hearts. We genuinely get that. And what's so interesting is there is actually a diagnosis of something called the broken heart syndrome, or Takotsubo's cardiomyopathy. This wasn't really talked about until the 1990s, which is why maybe you never heard of it before, because it's really a relatively new understanding. And what it is when someone is under an exorbitant amount of stress, whether it's heartache, grief, sadness, or experiencing something that's just overwhelming, all of those stress hormones flood the system and the heart actually gets stunned. And it appears as if the heart has had or is experiencing a heart attack. But in fact, that's not true.
Huh. So tell us exactly what happens.
So under these circumstances, again, it's not just the day-to-day stress. It's really that intense, intense stress. All of the hormones flood through the body, and there are theories of how it actually happens. Some people believe that the arteries go into spasm, but really, most often, 90% of the time, happens in women. Most women are postmenopausal, so they don't have a lot of that estrogen protection. And with this rush of hormones, the arteries contract and get stunned. The heart muscle gets stunned. And it almost looks like it balloons out the same way we might see in a heart attack. The EKG might look like a heart attack. The symptoms are often chest pain and shortness of breath. But in fact, when we actually, and most people feel so sick, they go to the emergency room for further treatment. And one of the testing that's done is an angiogram. And in an angiogram, we look for blood clots that would cause a heart attack. And when we do that test, we see everything normal. There is an outward ballooning picture of the heart instead of the normal contraction. And that is quintessential for the broken heart syndrome.
Huh. And I mean, it sounds, ooh, you know, if you're one of our listeners out there, it's like, wow, how can this just be happening from an emotion? How can this happen when you're feeling such incredible, say, for instance, grief from the loss of a loved one, or feeling so devastated by the breakup of maybe it just came from left field and you never even saw it coming? How is it possible? What is that mind-body connection that went on there?
Well, I think that's the interesting point of this whole story, that we know there is a mind-body connection. But what this disease really points out is the significant connection between the mind and the heart, and how we think really affects our heart. I think one of the easiest ways to understand this is just being in a situation of maybe being anxious or nervous, and you can start feeling your heart beating very, very quickly. That is a response from how we think and how we feel to the release of stress hormones to the effect of those stress hormones on the heart. Now, that might be in a very small situation that you can feel your heart pounding and you take a deep breath and relax and walk around the block and everything goes away. But imagine if something horrendous happens, there's an extraordinarily huge, emotionally stressful situation. It's not just a little bit of those hormones. The body, the heart gets saturated with these stress hormones, and the heart starts pounding really fast, and the blood pressure goes up, and the arteries constrict, and all of a sudden there's not enough blood flow to the heart, and it actually gets stunned. It's like being in shock from what has happened. It's a literal response to emotional situation.
Wow. I mean, I think a lot of women are probably scratching their heads saying, so it's absolutely possible for someone who has these extraordinary, sort of a tsunami of emotions happening, and they're, it's really stress hormone, cortisol, along with its best friend, adrenaline, because they both seem to be secreted roughly about the same time. And they both have a profound effect upon the entire cardiovascular system, because your blood pressure is affected, your pulse rate is affected, clearly the pumping of your heart is affected. And all of this comes together. You know, it kind of makes you really, you know, look at the whole issue of prevention. How does one approach prevention of running into problems like this, especially among the vulnerable, more postmenopausal women, because of that lack of estrogen, et cetera? You know, it almost makes you think that living a life with more meditation, more mindfulness, more taking a big breath and learning how to rein in anxiety, et cetera, really does a positive benefit. What do you think, and how do you advise your own patients?
Well, there are a couple of pieces to this. So if we talk about the lack of estrogen protection on the arteries, and we talk about the mechanism of how this happens, which is really the arteries going into spasm, then we can go backwards and understand if we train the arteries not to spasm, if we teach them how to stay relaxed, even in the setting of stress, then this shouldn't happen to us. So first and foremost, we go back to the basics, which is really exercise, diet. Believe it or not, these things help to keep the arteries healthy. And then the other piece is we have to work on the mind, and we have to work on how we perceive these stressors. And absolutely, we know through studies, things like meditation can maintain arterial dilatation or help maintain the health of the arteries to prevent them from spasming. And it also helps us not to react, not to respond in exactly the same way, so all of those stress hormones aren't released in the same intense way. This is not to say that we don't feel stress, that things don't upset us, that things are not emotional, but our physiologic response is less intense and therefore less potentially toxic to the heart.
Ah, okay. So when you're really talking about prevention, you're saying, all right, there is, again, solid evidence showing that when you learn to live a more mindful, thoughtful, present type of lifestyle, that you actually train your arteries to be able to stay bigger, wider, more dilated, especially under stress, so that they're not, it's almost like a trigger finger, immediately spasming down and causing the heart event, whatever it may be. And I think a lot of women don't know that there's real science behind this, that maybe some of it sounds like conjecture or airy-fairy, or maybe it's happening, maybe it's not. But I would like to make certain that women out there, you know, hear both Dr. Steinbaum and I loud and clear, and that is, there is extremely excellent science to show that when you live a more mindful, present type of lifestyle and add in that meditation, that checking in with oneself, then you can have a profound and beneficial effect on your heart in terms of preventing these spasm type episodes. Does that make sense, Dr. Steinbaum?
Absolutely. And the one thing I'd like to add to that is in September of 2017, so not too long ago, a scientific statement was released by the American Heart Association claiming and stating, based on all this research, that meditation, mindfulness, and all of these mind-body tools can be extraordinarily helpful in the prevention of heart disease and should be part of a heart-healthy life. So this is not just a mere conjecture or conversation. This is science, and this is part of what we need to do to stay healthy, partially because of the stress and certainly because of the effects of our intense lifestyles on our arteries. Being mindful, being present, meditating, using these modalities can absolutely change the outcome of our lives and keep us healthy and vital throughout our lives.
You know, I think that another thing that's really unique to women, and you and I both know this as physicians, is that women are much more prone to anxiety, almost at a rate of 20 to 1 compared to men. So we tend to perseverate. We tend to obsess. We tend to, well, I always love to say, we don't just worry, we pre-worry. Are we worrying enough? And it goes on and on. And, you know, what's really interesting is because we have this vulnerability, which I really think is sort of genetically part of our DNA because of caregiving, big time caregiving. We're just, you know, where's that child this very second? What's going on? And back and forth, that sometimes it's hard for us to just calm down that mental Cuisinart of our brain that just keeps going round and round and round and really stirring up the stress and anxiety, which makes it so difficult for us to take that deep cleansing breath and step back and chill out a little bit. So I think anxiety is a huge piece of the problem here as well. How do you work with that with your own wonderful patients?
I think that what you're saying is part of the most likely reason that this is so toxic. So if there's a baseline anxiety, you're already living on stress hormones, right? Because they're constantly happening if you're living anxious. And then add a huge stressor on top of that, and it's just overload. It's too much. Every single patient in my practice has to have a tool, has to have something that they use to manage the daily anxiety and stress of life. As you mentioned, 20 to 1, women are living anxious. And that baseline is so really horrendous for all aspects of living. If you're living with that mind-body connection completely disconnected, you're less likely to take care of yourself. You're less likely to eat healthy. You're more likely to make very poor lifestyle choices. You're less likely to be sleeping, more likely to be smoking, drinking, overeating, not exercising. And this big loop is part of that lack of self-care. So then you have lack of self-care and, on the other side, caretaking personality, putting other people first. And the setup for you is really not having a safety net of staying healthy. And when something happens tragic, that's it. There's nothing underneath you. And so I find that really telling patients, find something. I don't care what it is, breathing, mindfulness, exercise, meditation, whatever it is, find something every day that is for stress management.
Yeah, you know, and I'm just like you, harping on this whole issue of, would we please, please start taking this meditation thing seriously? You know, I understand that at some point in history, it was sort of blown off as another airy-fairy moment here. It's not. It's real. We do have to check in with ourselves. But women, again, you know, we have to have that little conversation with all of you, because you put everyone else ahead of you. You fall off your own radar screen if you were ever on it in the first place. And I really want to stress that self is not a four-letter word, that you need to take care of yourself, that, you know, caring for yourself makes you a better caregiver. If you could make that connection, then you could really see the return on your investment for the moments you have where you step away, check in with yourself. I'm giving you a license to chill here, right? And then I really want you to start integrating this into your life on a daily basis, small steps, little bits and pieces here, there, and everywhere. Because when you do that, there again, there are really seriously excellent benefits, especially in this case, for your heart health. Because, you know, listen, it's not breast cancer that's killing women as the number one killer in this country. It's heart disease, big time. Dr. Steinbaum, tell us some of the statistics about heart disease in women, because I'm sure all they really read about or see about on television is some guy, their husband, their father, their brother, somebody, clutching their chest and having the big one. But when's the last time you ever saw that with a woman on television or anywhere in the media? It's like women can't believe it because no one is putting it out there as a message. So help women understand how prevalent this is.
The statistics are so scary. More women die of heart disease than all cancers combined. And as much as we are so concerned about breast cancer, 1 in 33 women will die of breast cancer, whereas 1 in 3 women will die of heart disease. In this country, that's one woman every 80 seconds will die of heart disease. But here's the most amazing piece of that story. 80% of the time, it's preventable. And if I were to sit here and say, you're going to die of heart disease statistically, but it is the disease that is more in your control than anything else, it's kind of powerful and empowering to be able to say, I can take care of myself. I can make a huge impact on my life and what happens to me just by putting myself first and by taking care of myself. And I think that is the most important piece of this story. And what we're talking about is what you just said. It's about self-care. It's about putting yourself on the radar, putting yourself on that list of being maybe important enough or not feeling guilty, but understanding that taking care of yourself is an absolute necessity, because without doing it, that the chances are you're going to get heart disease statistically. And that's kind of frightening, but on the flip side, it allows us to know it's up to us. It's in our control.
You know, there you have it. that was probably the best summation ever. And that really means that this isn't something that is like a comet that's going to fall on your head and you have no control over it. This is really all about the fact that you can take control of the lifestyle behaviors that are going to have that positive benefit on your heart. And that, would you please drill it in your mind that the number one killer of women in this country is not cancer. It's heart disease. I'm going to reiterate what Dr. Steinbaum just said. Heart disease is the number one killer, and more women die of that than all of the cancers that affect women together. I mean, that's huge. That's very huge. So please take it seriously. You should walk around. You should know certain things about your own cardiovascular health. Right? I bet you can tell me right now what your, you know, partner, brother, husband, whomever, what their cholesterol is. What's yours? What are the other numbers they should know, Dr. Steinbaum? If you, as a cardiologist, were first meeting someone and you asked them certain questions, you know, say, for instance, from their history, what has been your fill in the blank?
So I need to know subjectively. I want to know their family history. I want to know their own history. And believe it or not, what happens to women during pregnancy has an impact on whether or not they're going to develop heart disease later in life. So I want to know everything. I want to know when menstruation started. I want to know pregnancy history. I want to know how someone eats, how they exercise, how they sleep. If they're anxious, if they're depressed, if they have a social support and network, how their living arrangement is. And then I want objective data. I want to know their cholesterol, their LDL, the bad cholesterol, the HDL, the good cholesterol. I want to know their triglycerides, which is very associated with diet and sugars and sweets and simple carbohydrates. I want to know their body mass index, their sugars, their blood pressures. I want to know habits. I didn't mention smoking. This is critical. I need to know that. Not just on a daily basis, but I keep hearing people say, I'm just a social smoker on the weekends. There's no such thing. I want to understand someone's life because as women, our whole being and how from the time we started menstruating till the time they end up in my office, who that woman is how her heart is affected. And I think that piece of a woman's heart story is something that hasn't been talked about enough, that it's not just about cholesterol and it's not just about blood pressure. It's about who she is. And once we figure out who she is, we get to figure out how can she be the best she can be and as vital as she can be. And it comes down to getting those numbers under control. It's diet, it's exercise, it's stopping smoking. And it's also about stress management, which may include meditation.
I love it. This is exactly what women out there need to hear. Because again, you know, we started with the broken heart syndrome. And what we're ending up with is the blueprint for how to live, to be able to prevent this from happening in the first place, to reduce the odds, but most importantly, to live your life more optimally and certainly prevent cardiovascular disease. Everyone out there, we've been listening to our wonderful go-to cardiologist, Dr. Suzanne Steinbaum. The title of her book is Dr. Suzanne Steinbaum's Heart Book, Every Woman's Guide to a Heart-Healthy Life. Her website is Dr. That's Dr. Suzanne with two N's, Steinbaum.com, and as well, also her heart book. Oh, Dr. Steinbaum, thank you so much for being on the Herb podcast to help us understand, well, how to be able to live from the heart, because isn't that your motto, Dr. Steinbaum?
That's all I talk about. In life, we always have to live from the heart. I said, demote your brain as CEO. And if you really live from the heart, and that means taking care of it, then everything's going to be just fine.
Yay, that's what I want to hear. This is such a great episode. And everyone out there, remember to catch every episode of Her by hitting subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And then just take a moment right now and run on over to iTunes and rate and review this podcast, because I'm waiting to hear from you and your feedback is absolutely golden. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek, or on Twitter at PamPeakMD, and you can also check out our Her Show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening, and stay well.